Hi, I'm Russell and I work at The Video Store, the place that you can go to once a week when you're looking for something to watch. When the store is quiet, behind the counter, I get to talk to my friends about the films and the series that we're loving. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop.
Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV?
How's it?
Good morning.
Hello, hello.
I'm back, baby.
Yes.
Yay.
I'm here.
Are you exhausted?
My body is here.
Yeah.
My soul is in about 3 a.m.
So you're jet lagged, basically.
I left it at 3 a.m. No, welcome to The Video Store. Thank you for wandering in to our lovely video store. We've got ourselves a Graham G-Force Hackney.
G'day.
We have got ourselves a Perrin P-Dog Hirsch.
Hello.
Hello. Give us that Liam Hemsworth hello.
Hello.
There we go. And my name is Russell. I am the owner of The Bioscope, which is an independent cinema here in Johannesburg. And for those who might have missed, I am also a dad.
Yeah.
And yay. I wanted to thank you guys for looking after the shop for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I think you did a fantastic job.
Mm.
I enjoyed listening to those episodes,
okay,
objectively,
yes,
and not listening to myself and how I pronounce things and what my kind of vocal tics are.
Yes,
and so it was very cool to just be a fan, and I really enjoyed the Oscar
great
discussion that you had.
Cool.
I think Perrin, you're a stellar employee here, being someone who's watched all the
every movie ever made,
just those documentaries and those.
Yeah, thanks.
Foreign films. I wanted to chime in a little bit about that.
Right.
So maybe I can get that out the way now.
Mm.
Then we've got lots to talk about.
Yeah.
I want to get into a few films. I want to get into some TV shows that I've watched.
Cool.
We'll play Hey Did You Guys See?
Mm.
We can play the movie game.
All right.
We'll get into it. But just to speak on the Oscar episode,
mm-hmm,
I think it's important to mention, and it's quite cool that we're chatting about this now at the start of the year. I say two things when it comes to festivals at the Bioscope.
Right.
When it comes to Encounters, which is going to happen first, which is in June, July. I forget the dates exactly. Mm. So it's middle of the year.
Mm.
And it's nice because it's always in the coldest, darkest part of the year. And this just creates this warm hum for a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yes.
But what I tell people is I say, this is a documentary film festival. And just to give you an idea, there's usually a good chance that in this program, they have programmed the film that will win Best Documentary.
Yes.
Yeah.
It happens more often than it doesn't.
Mm.
We opened our documentary festival. We opened Encounters last year with the Putin documentary.
Oh, right.
Oh, cool.
Mr. Nobody vs. Putin.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
And according to you guys in that chat, that's a front runner to win.
It's between there and I think The Perfect Neighbor.
Yeah, okay. But I'm just saying that just shows you the caliber of the Encounters documentary film festival.
Yes.
So look out for that. That's in the middle of the year.
Cool.
It's such a, like, I'm glad we do that because documentaries are such a overlooked medium in this country, especially.
But in a way, they are very much consumed in a certain way, certain kinds of documentaries.
At least theatrically, what I'm saying.
Theatrically not. And that's what the Bioscope's always done. And to be honest, I may be guilty of not doing as much documentary as we used to. But Encounters is an important part. Then there is the European Film Festival, which will happen in like later on in the year, September, October-ish time of the year. And there's always a good chance that the foreign language film could be screened in that.
Okay.
Just because these are the best films to come out of the European countries.
Mm.
Obviously, a foreign language film, as we know, could be Tsotsi, which won 1 year, or an Asian film, or South American. But when it comes to the European contenders, there is a good chance that the film is in that festival.
Right.
Yeah.
And we screened Serat.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is one of the ones you guys spoke about. So I just thought I'd mention that in your program at the Bioscope, in these two particular festivals, you've got a good chance of watching a film that will be an Oscar winner.
Okay.
in these niche, smaller categories.
Right. Yeah, especially with that upcoming European festival, they'll likely bring whatever wins. So it'll probably be...
Yeah, yeah.
Or not even... I mean, Secret Agent's Brazilian, if that's the favorite to win, but Sentimental Value will probably be in there. Or It Was Just an Accident, even though that's...
It Was Just an Accident was... Anatomy of a Fall.
Yeah.
The only chance you got a chance to watch it in South Africa was at the European Film Festival.
Yeah.
Which, thankfully, the Bioscope's doing now.
Nice.
Which is cool. All right. Lekker. Cool, guys. Should we do a little round of Hey Did You Guys See?
Let's do it.
Cool.
You want to go for it?
Yeah, let's go for it. So, cool. Hey Did You Guys See? Kristen Stewart is buying a theater in LA and is restoring it. It was a very much loved theater that's had better days, and she's decided to buy it and restore it, which I think is fantastic.
Cinema theater?
Yeah, it's an actual cinema theater. Yeah. Okay. So I have always liked her. I love how her and Robert Pattinson post Twilight have just like really made a point to show like, yo, we want to do interesting things.
Yeah.
And we are good actors and stuff. And she is, she's directing now as well. Her debut feature is coming out later this year. But yeah, I'm excited to see that because she's a proper like cinephile as well. And even if she wasn't, it's just great seeing people trying to restore like landmarks like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it's nice. Lovely. It's lovely.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tarantino owns the New Beverly in LA. It's cool when that kind of figure can be behind something and help curate it and pump the necessary money in.
Yeah, for sure. And they also, because they are champions of like film, they show like 35mm prints and like 70mm prints and stuff. Like with One Battle After Another, they'll shot in VistaVision, right? And there's only like 3 cinemas in the whole world that can show VistaVision.
Jeez.
I think one of them's in London. I think that might be the BFI, that massive cinema there that Cole wanted to go to when he was in London.
Okay.
And I could be wrong. And I think there's 2 in the US.
Yeah, right. It makes sense.
But you know what's the cool thing about that? Do you know how PTA got the VistaVision cameras?
I do know, but you must tell us.
Yeah, so Giovanni Ribisi.
Oh, yes.
Actor now... DOP, who's an amazing cinematographer, actually, his hobby was rebuilding cameras.
Right.
And like restoring cameras. And he had like, I think 2 or 3 VistaVision cameras.
Yeah.
And like PTA experimented with it on the master. One of the reasons why he said he loves VistaVision is that it can be used for big expansive shots, but also super intimate close-ups.
Right.
And Ribisi was like, yo, I've got one of these cameras, why don't you use it? And apparently they broke the camera on set. I think it was during the car chase sequence. And they like obviously insurance covered it and stuff, and I think they fixed it. I think it's such a cool little story that
love the fact that he's also carving out such an interesting career for himself. Giovanni Ribisi, for those who perhaps don't know, he's the bad guy in Avatar. He's he's Phoebe's brother and friends.
Yeah,
yes.
He's that dude. You'll recognize.
He was the
him.
Lead in a movie that's underseen now as Boiler Room. Do you remember
Boiler Room? Was cool. It was
Vin Diesel.
It was that sort of Wall Street
stock bros.
Yeah, and I just love that because he's sort of chosen a really interesting path to sort of still act but be a cinematographer.
Multifaceted guy. I mean, if you want to see his work, I think he was doing music videos and stuff, but his feature film debut as a DOP was Strange Darling, which is one of my favorite movies of 2024.
Okay.
And that's a thriller that's told non-chronologically, non-linear.
Strange Darling.
Strange Darling. It's fucking amazing.
Who directed that?
J.T. Molnar, he wrote Long Walk.
Okay.
And he's going to be doing the that's a Hey Did You Guys See. So, Hey Did You Guys See, A24's acquired Texas Chainsaw Massacre to develop a TV show.
Oh.
Okay. And it'll be a TV show.
Yeah, he's going to be doing that.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, I don't know if it's going to be a prequel series or a continuation. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
We once screened Texas Chainsaw Massacre on a rooftop in town.
That's cool.
Nice.
And all the way up the stairs, we had sort of bloody sort of things and props and stuff.
Yeah, grimy.
It was a short-lived but very wholesome collaboration with the cinematographer in South Africa that's done so well, Jamie Ramsey.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He wanted to do some outdoor screenings at one point, and it was cool to work together with him.
That's very cool.
Okay. And we did Texas Chainsaw Massacre on the roof.
Nice.
It was very cool.
Hey, did you guys see that the Super Bowl happened?
Mm-hmm.
And that she usually did. Comes with a bunch of trailers. But this year, the only trailer that we got that we hadn't already had a trailer for was The Adventures of Cliff Booth.
That was okay. One of my
which
things,
is the
yeah,
David Fincher know. Directed, Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino written
sequel to the sequel. Character in yeah. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Exactly.
Okay, have we seen it? Have you had a chance to watch it?
Yeah, I watched the trailer.
Does it
okay,
look cool?
What do we get?
Not much. It's mostly, I think it's quite early
it's a
on.
Teaser.
Yeah, it's very much a teaser trailer, so it's mostly just, hey, vibes.
Cool.
Okay.
Which was the movie,
yes.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, was very much a vibe.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people who don't know what Tarantino is went in thinking they were going to watch this, you know, crazy Pulp Fiction-esque plot. But
yes.
it didn't really exist. It was just a combination of vibey sequences.
But yeah.
Do you feel... So my biggest problem with that movie is I loved the whole hangout aspect of it.
That was great.
But I felt the last 15 minutes was classic Tarantino. Backed into a corner. How do I get out of this ultra violence? Fuck yeah.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
Hated that aspect. But I need to rewatch it because...
I definitely need to rewatch it.
Because I was loving it till that point. And I was like, fuck's sakes, Tarantino. Right.
We have taken great joy in selling the book that
yes.
Tarantino wrote after the movie.
Expanded story, right?
It's great. The plot line of the home invasion is a paragraph in the book.
Wild.
So much of the book, funny enough, perhaps maybe too much of the book, is the plot of the TV show
right.
that he stars in. At one point in the movie, he's the baddie in the Western.
Yeah.
And there's the scene with him and the girl.
And she's like,
before
that's
they,
the best acting I've ever seen.
It's so yeah. good. So he's fully realized that, which that okay. should be a show on its own.
Right.
It's this kind of Yellowstone-esque dynasty of brothers and
yeah.
family yes. and ranching. And good guys and bad guys. But then the next biggest embellishment is the life of Cliff Booth.
Yes.
And he wanted to give a bit more to that, which is Brad Pitt's character.
Mm. Yeah.
And they allude to an interesting situation with his wife, where he maybe didn't kill her on a boat.
Yeah.
I forgot about that, yeah.
And then what the book also expands on is his love for cinema, which right. gives Tarantino a chance in the book
yeah.
to just... you know, unadulteratedly talk about, you know, Japanese cinema and his love for cinema. And I remember reading this on a beach
yeah.
going, oh my God, this book's written for me.
Like, yeah.
I just love this. It's just pages on Kurosawa
nice.
And this dude's sort of just writing whatever the fuck he wants to write. And I really enjoyed the book.
Okay, nice.
I thought it was lovely. And I think
read, yeah.
people should read it.
Cool.
But it'll be interesting that we're now getting this film from David Fincher,
yeah.
who's a very meticulous, very calculated, very somewhat dark director. A director who very famously makes actors do 80 to 100
yeah.
takes for
yeah,
some
it's
fucking
overkill.
Reason.
Yeah.
That seems so stupid. That's like Kubrick-esque
yeah,
directing.
That, the difference is I don't think he's an asshole like Kubrick.
Yeah, none of that now in my sort of older life looking at this, like think that's good.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, an impressionable person would go, you know, he's being an artist and he's trying to get it right. But
yeah.
I look at this now, I'm like, you're only pissing off the actors.
Yeah.
And if you can't get what you need.
Like, I'm going direct.
Yeah.
Like, do your job and direct the actor to the performance.
Why do they need to
rather
do
than doing 60 takes
That's...
until you, they've like, the whole, like, the theory, the idea is that you, like, wear them down until.
I mean, that's ridiculous.
They're exhausted, and that's when you get like a quote-unquote natural performance.
Yeah.
But I'm like, direct them to that.
Yeah.
Like,
but
that's
the thing
job.
Is, so for me personally, I think there's certain directors who don't like to do that many takes because then it becomes mechanical, right?
Yes.
You want to do it in as few takes as possible so it feels more real, like they're almost stepping into it, right?
Yeah.
With famously, The Social Network, that opening scene where Jesse Eisenberg is breaking up with, it's not Rooney Mara. It is Rooney Mara.
Yeah, it is Rooney Mara.
That great scene, mm-hmm. this sequence. They did that, I think it was like 98 or 99 times. And like, apparently the actors were okay with it, allegedly.
Right.
But like, when you go on to, especially if you're like a grip or, you know, a gaffer or something with, yeah. with Fincher, you know what you're getting into.
Yes.
You know?
No, it's very interesting because on the other side of the scale, you've got Clint Eastwood.
I was going to mention
who
this.
Who very famously does like one take.
Yeah, which can be not good in my opinion.
Maybe, the answer is you know.
Somewhere in between.
Just a few more takes.
Yeah.
But there was a famous moment that Matt Damon has encountered where, you know, he was being Francois Pienaar in Invictus and he had a few more thoughts and opinions and was willing to try it one or two more times and said, well, I can do it again. And Eastwood apparently said, do you want to waste everybody's time?
Yeah.
Do you want to waste everybody's time?
And he's like, no. Okay, well, moving on then.
Yeah.
But that's your... What did you guys think of Invictus?
Generally, I liked it.
I have no memory of that movie.
I liked it. It was important. I was chuffed that that story was told on that scale.
Yeah.
What is our age difference, Perrin?
I think you are like 5 or 6 years older than me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I was just old enough
to remember
to know and remember that day.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't remember it at all.
I think you were too young.
Yeah, I was 95, so I was 4.
Yeah. No, you were yeah. But no, I had family friends. We all got together. We were in the room. We watched it. We knew what was going on. We knew the stakes. We knew the things. I think my folks were in that stadium.
Oh.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, no, they somehow got seats to it or something. They weren't with us. They were at the stadium.
Because like for South Africans, that's one of those events. Where were you when we won?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, but my problem with that movie is I just felt they should have gotten someone who was a little more interested in rugby. Because those rugby scenes made it didn't look like it was difficult to win the World Cup. Like, that was a difficult World Cup to win.
Sure.
And, like, Clint Eastwood was like, oh, just make them, like, let's do, like, them just groping each other in slow motion.
Sure.
And call the day. Do you want to waste everybody's time? But, yeah, I mean, it's a great story. It's, Hashtag never forget.
Hashtag never forget. Have you heard Timothy Chalamet recently like quoting the book?
Oh, cool!
Quoting Invictus.
That's
cool. The passage that it's all sort of named after.
Right.
There's an interview. There's some junket with him and Zendaya next to him. So it's obviously during Dune.
Yeah.
And he sort of casually says, yeah, you know, it's important. You got to realize, you know, life comes from you, not at you. And, you know, to be the captain of your own soul. And Zendaya goes like, what? Like, where the fuck does this wisdom come from?
From
like a young little kid.
I love their relationship because they're quite
like
playful.
Okay.
Like, I know on the red carpet, I think it was last year for the Oscars, like, she walked past and he was like on an interview and he just shouted, hey, dickhead. And she was like, oh, hey. So, like, I think it's very cute.
You got a nice little banter.
Yeah, banter. Okay. Hey, did you guys see Darren Aronofsky of Requiem for a Dream, The Wrestler, The Whale fame?
Very credible filmmaker.
Yeah. Has sold his soul to AI and has developed an AI historical series about the, like, America becoming America. The 1792
what is about.
Declaration of Independence, all that stuff.
He's doing a lot in television.
Mm.
He's, like, executive producing... like a lot of National Geographic stuff.
I think this is for Time magazine or something.
He's doing a lot.
But for our listeners, the whole thing is AI generated.
And is this like a full series?
Like, I think it's they're like it's like mini episodes.
Okay,
so they're probably like 10 minutes or something.
Right,
but they're voiced by SAG actors, which is the Screen Actors Guild.
Right,
I don't know if those actors are going to want to be credited.
Right.
But they assure us that they are. And the whole thing is serious uncanny valley. It looks so strange and so off. It looks like dog shit. It just looks like AI slop. It is AI slop.
Interesting.
And it's just, for me, as much as I love several of Aronofsky's films, like Black Swan is incredible, The Wrestler is incredible, Requiem for a Dream is great. Rewatching it is difficult, though. But I feel like his passion has kind of dwindled over the years. Like, he isn't quite the filmmaker he used to be, and it's kind of showing, at least for me. And with this, it's just like, what are you doing? This is such an insult to art.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what AI is, right? It just mines everything that exists. Mm. You just punch in prompts. Like, there's a page called, it's like a filmmaking page, a really good, credible page. They do cool stuff. They usually have like actual guys in the industry write the articles and stuff.
Okay.
I can't remember their name right now. But they posted a thing like best tips for AR filmmakers.
All right.
You're not a filmmaker. You just punch in prompts into a computer and it shows you a scene. Hey, I'm a filmmaker. It's like...
I do get the sentiment.
Spoken about this. Sorry, my bad.
I do get the sentiment, but I think there is something to be said for the fact that this tool now exists.
Mm.
It's not going anywhere,
and
there is a question of like, what can you do with it?
Yeah,
and so what can it unlock that can help? Yeah, that can show somebody something.
Yeah.
I think what should you do with it is a more important question.
Yeah. Is it a tool or is it literally an employee? Does it do all the work for you?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure, I get that. But I just think it's unavoidable that it's here and what should you do is the question.
It just sucks that all these tech bros who have not one creative bone in their fucking bodies are the ones pushing this stuff.
Yeah.
Sure. So, like, they're the ones who are like, oh, anyone can be an artist now. No, like, come on, man. Like,
but what I can say is that the AI, in terms of asking questions on Google and how, like, you can get that answer, it's completely changed the way.
No,
like,
it's impressive.
In the last 2 weeks, we have had to Google many things around this baby.
Just be aware that those answers people have like shown that those answers are often wrong.
Cool. No. I accept that. Just like if I had Googled it and I'd found the article and looked within the article.
Place baby in microwave.
No. I do know where they've come from.
Yeah. Mm.
But I do think there's something incredible about just all this wealth of information that's been mined and how the machines are helping us find the answers. Mm. There's certainly some really good things that AI can sort of give us.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be TV shows.
It shouldn't be fucking the military in America now, because that's what Elon Musk has just organized, is that he's partnered with the Pentagon. So Grok is going to be Grok is X's AI assistant. They're going to integrate that into the Pentagon's fucking system. Like, do these idiots watch Terminator and fucking The Matrix and go, hey, let's fuck up the world. That looks awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like Elon Musk.
Neo's the bad guy, right?
Yeah. Like fucking these guys watch they watch Star Wars and go, hell yeah, the Empire. Fuck those rebels up. Yeah. Comply. You know, like.
I do kind of side with Agent Smith on this one. funny. Well, speaking of sort of dodgy visuals, hey, did you guys see a more extended cut of the Michael trailer?
Oh, yes.
Ugh. Doesn't it just look waxy and weird?
It looks shit.
It looks like one of those musical biopics that are exactly the same as all the other musical biopics.
But just to the point where that CGI and those concert scenes and just things.
It looks like Bohemian Rhapsody. It looks exactly the same.
It's the same producer, proudly on the banner
yes.
from the producers of
Jeez.
Yeah, fuck. And...
And I don't think this Jafar dude can act.
Oh,
they're
right.
Not, they're not giving
Turn
you
the music up,
but oh they're not giving you anything in the trailer that shows any kind of acting acumen. Yeah. Just the fact that he looks vaguely similar.
Yeah, that being said, I still think it's going to make $1 billion.
Oh, it's going
to kill.
Well.
It's gonna
But I have to. I have to admit, the Michael Jackson biopic. That's what we're talking about. Here. It's just called Michael. It's directed by Anton Fuqua. I think the one thing that's perhaps going for it is that I think they've released it at the right time.
Right. Mm.
I think biopics tend to come out a little too soon.
Mm.
Weirdly, oddly done. You know, things like that Amy Winehouse one was just
awful.
Was awful and it was too soon. The Robbie Williams one, it's like the bro's still fucking touring. Like,
but
we didn't, you know.
To that, sorry, to that, to the defense of that, that was the most unique biopic.
I loved
biopic
that.
I thought
it
was
ages.
A good movie.
I loved that. It was amazing.
It was just,
but yeah, I think the world had just stopped remembering and thinking about Michael Jackson. He'd left the consciousness of the, you know. The public,
right,
and this is going to launch it back, which is interesting. It'll be interesting to see, because immediately my brain goes, "Fuck, let's go more Nick Bromfield documentary."
Right,
let's rather have a biopic that isn't endorsed by the family.
Yeah,
which is a big problem.
That can get into far more of the weeds of the guy,
and of course, remember why it was delayed in the first place, because it was supposed to be out last year.
Yeah.
It's because they included one of the children that was involved in all the lawsuits, who specifically in the agreement that they made in like whatever settlement they had was not to depict him in the estate were not allowed to depict this guy
in any way.
Such and that's bullshit. Exactly what they did in this movie.
That's why we know it's going to be a scrubbed movie.
Yeah,
it's, 100%. It's the problem is Aswell's now it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, it's the right time to release it, but I think they're scrambling now because Michael Jackson's pictures have appeared in the Epstein files.
Oh, right.
And now people are going to be, that's in the back of their mind. But Michael Jackson, despite years of controversy, people have always not really cared about it.
100%. You
know that's always been the interesting thing. That's always been the interesting thing, is that you got one camp that goes, hey, they fucking uncovered a treasure trove of desensitizing child porn he showed kids before they fucking slept in the same bed as him.
Yeah. Even if he didn't.
And everybody reads it and just goes, oh, but I love baby Michael.
Oh, but Thriller, yeah. And, like,
and the beats and the groove and the dancing. And you're like, oh, my God.
But do you know what's interesting about the censored biopic is that, like, with Complete Unknown with Bob Dylan, is that, so he approved that film.
Yeah.
They got permission from him and stuff. He approved of how they characterize him and stuff.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about that movie is that it breaks down the myth of Bob Dylan, and they show him that he was kind of a dick.
Yeah,
he was kind of a dick and also kind of created. He was a persona created.
Like I said, after watching it, I never felt like the movie was trying to convince me to like him.
Exactly, and that's what you want with a good biopic, right? Is you want to show the flaws of that person.
I want to mention at this point is that we have the DVD to put on the shelf.
Oh, yeah.
Deliver Me From Nowhere. This.
Okay.
That's the fucking Springsteen
that's
one.
That's the Springsteen
one, okay.
But that is now on Disney+.
That is now on Disney+.
Yeah.
I'm getting them confused.
It's a good movie.
Yeah. Because I also wanted to mention, Deliver Me From Nowhere had the involvement of Springsteen.
Mm. Yeah.
Maybe a little bit to its detriment.
Right.
Where it was so personal and it was all him, but he crafted it to be a character he wanted you to see.
Yes.
That's interesting.
And so
this tortured soul.
He wanted that. He embellished that. He leaned into that.
That's a great album, though.
It's a fucking
Holy
great album.
Holy shit, it's good.
Yeah,
it's made me.
It's the only Springsteen album I like.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's like experimental. It's odd. Like there's that scene in it where he's listening to Suicide, which is a band, not literal Suicide. And like one of the songs in that album sounds exactly like he just listened to Suicide and he put it on like I got to do something like this.
Yes.
But yeah.
Just as a point of perspective, Michael Jackson still has 60 million monthly listeners on Spotify.
Jesus. Sure. No. So, there's
he's still, I would argue he's still the most famous musician ever.
Oh, yeah.
No, more so
than the Beatles.
The shows he did were massive.
Yeah.
Like
insane.
People talk about how big stuff like the Eras Tour and that sort of thing was. Mm. nothing compared to what Michael Jackson was doing.
He was a superstar, great performer, but unfortunately,
wild.
Anyways.
Do we have any more?
I've got two more. Quick ones.
Okay, let's do it.
Do you guys have any? Okay, I'm going to power through them.
Yeah.
Paul Thomas Anderson won the Directors Guild Award.
I was going to bring this up as well.
So that's happened.
Yeah, so you're going to see the Guild Awards, like we mentioned in the Oscar episode. We'll start getting a better sense of what's going to probably win at the Oscars, where you can start laying your bets. The DGA Directors Guild Awards.
There you go.
More like 90% of the times determines who the winner for Best Director will be.
Yeah.
So at this point, he's the front runner. A lot of people are dabbling that it's going to be between him and Coogler. I think this means he's overtaken him.
Right.
I think Sinners has a better chance of winning Best Picture at this point.
Okay.
We'll see what happens at the SAGs. But the last time I can remember that a DGA winner that didn't win Best Director at the Oscars was Sam Mendes for 1917.
Oh, okay.
Bong Joon-ho eventually won that.
Yes.
So that's a cool little thing. Yay, PTA. We love you for that. And then last one, hey, did you guys see Sean Baker's new film?
I wondered what he was going to do next.
Yeah.
Director of last year's Oscar
sweeper
winner, Anora. He's doing a film called Sunny Dawa, which obviously has been shot, will debut at Berlin this year. Shot entirely on an iPhone, so he's going back to his iPhone roots. He shot Tangerine on an iPhone 5, I think, which is a great movie. And it's led by Michelle Yeoh.
Oh, cool.
And she plays multiple characters in a night market in Malaysia. So it's going to take place in one
And the
evening.
Film is called?
Okay.
Sunny Dawa.
Sunny Dawa.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I'm very excited for that because, that's going to be cool. But hey, did you guys see? Yay.
Yay.
Very nice.
Lekker.
Yeah.
Lekker.
Should we move on?
Yes.
Okay. So, just to stock the shelves, as I said, Deliver Me From Nowhere is on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I thought it would be cool to mention that Life of Chuck is on Showmax.
Okay, nice.
We spoke at great length about that. That is a Stephen King adaptation.
Mm.
Mike Flanagan making what I thought was my favorite film of that year.
Oh, Life of Chuck. Sorry,
Life of Chuck is amazing.
Raffle through my brain.
This is Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah.
This is the life of this dude told in three parts.
Yeah.
In order of 3, 2, 1.
Yeah.
Sort of reverse.
Mm.
It's magical. It's gooey. It's lovely.
Yes. On that note as well, talking about the shelves, Killers of the Flower Moon is actually getting a physical release.
Yeah, Criterion Collection.
In March.
Pre-ordered.
Oh, of course you have. Of course you have.
Yeah,
but is this
the
first time that Apple has done a physical release of a movie?
No, they did. I'm trying to think what the other. Oh, they did Severance on Blu-ray recently.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, like last year or something. Sure. Season one. I'm hoping season two comes. Killers of the Flower Moon is the main one that I can think of. I'm blanking. I know there's another one.
Okay.
I don't think it's Criterion. But yeah, it's definitely it's a big deal.
Yeah,
because I know when Criterion has a deal with Netflix as well for specific titles.
Yeah,
So they released Roma, they released The Irishman.
How many DVD copies will they make? Take a stab.
So those Criterion don't really do limited edition runs.
Yeah.
But how many do you think they actually make?
I don't know.
How many parents are there out in the world going, I fucking pre-ordered my copy of this 3-hour fucking slow poisoning?
These days.
The movie is about a 3-hour slow poisoning.
Yeah.
I'd watch the shit out of that.
It literally is a dude slowly poisoning his wife for 3 hours. It's great.
It's
a great movie.
I think,
but let's not pretend it's anything other than that.
Okay, I think so.
And someone's family slowly being fucking murdered at the same time.
Yeah.
So I think it depends, right? So there's certain boutique labels where they'll have like it'll be a numbered box set, or there'll be like limited edition run of 5,000, right?
Okay.
So I think that should put into perspective how many
parents are out there,
or even ones like Criterion, I think, obviously, because it's such a big brand in terms of cinephiles, their runs don't really run out. There are a few out of print titles, like The Third Man.
I'd just be curious to know how many there would end up being, but maybe it's somewhere between 5,000 to 10,000.
I think a lot more.
I was going to say it's probably more than that, especially these days. Physical media is kind of making a bit of a resurgence, not like mainstream resurgence, but it's like vinyl. You know, I think you can put Blu-rays and that sort of thing on the same page as you can with vinyl these days.
I think because also people are realizing that owning something digitally on a platform, they don't actually own it, because that company can literally remove that at any time they want.
No, that makes sense.
So, yeah.
Also, one more thing to stock on the shelf. The Naked Gun is on Showmax.
Yeah, cool. What a
and,
fun movie.
And I enjoyed
it. So much fun.
In between feeds and sleeps, I watched a little bit of it. And I must say, it's good.
They get the spirit of the Leslie Nielsen.
And at the time we spoke about it, how the commentary was, this is important, this film needs to exist.
Yes.
We need to have these kinds of comedies, we need to have these kinds of films still being made. Mm. And it did, and it did its job. Yeah.
And we're getting a new scary movie this year, aren't we?
Yeah, I'm not so excited.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, in terms of that, like that genre, having a bit of a resurgence.
Movies, yeah.
There's a line when the dude's talking about his supper club. He's got this elite supper club, and he says it's how the black eyed peas say, "Let's get retarded up in here."
Right.
And he's like, he said something like, "Can we say retarded?" He's like, "In my supper club, we can." It's so stupid. It's so dumb. All right, should we move on?
Yeah.
Okay. Should we play our game?
Oh yes.
Oh flip.
All right.
Fuck.
Should we play our game?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. This is us playing What Movie Am I?
Yeah.
We'll sort of move through it quickly.
Yes.
This is a game that we stuck here at the Bioscope. All right. You got to guess the movie.
Mm.
I have an insightful narrator.
Okay.
I am co-written by brothers Alfonso and Carlos Coron.
Okay.
The next one is too obvious.
Narrator.
My Fonsi plot involves a coming-of-age road trip across Mexico.
Oh,
got it.
You got to say it.
Eat to Mama Damien.
You got to say it. Oh, Captain, my Captain.
Yes.
Oh, shit. Sorry. Okay. Oh, Captain, my Captain. Eat to Mama Damien.
Yes.
It's lovely. I love that movie.
Yeah, it's great film.
Oh, this is perfect. I literally watched this movie this weekend.
Oh.
Okay.
I am a musical.
Mm-hmm.
I originated from a popular TV series. My story takes place during a road trip, and then the next two are really obvious and they'll give it away. But I don't feel like I've given you enough clues. I'll make up my own clue.
Okay.
Disney just released a single episode revival of this franchise.
What?
And I actually want to talk about it today.
It's a musical, but it's based on a TV show.
Yes. At one point, it was the biggest TV show in the world.
A musical based on a TV show. When did the TV show come out?
It would have been the 80s.
Like Taxi or...
What?
It's probably my favorite thing in the whole world.
Really?
What?
Not my favorite movie, but my favorite like franchise thing in the whole
world. Oh, The Muppets.
Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, Captain, my Captain, The Muppets.
Fuck, the Muppets movie.
Sorry, go ahead.
I fucking love The Muppets.
Yeah, okay. Cole's a big Muppets boy as well.
So they released just one episode?
Yeah. I want to talk about it.
Okay, all right.
This is a good one.
Okay, let's go.
Throwback. Okay. I'm a sports film.
Cool.
Okay. I aim to challenge gender and cultural stereotypes. Okay. I'm centered around a British Indian family.
My captain.
Bended like Beckham.
There you go.
Wow. Good job, guys. That was excellent.
Keira Knightley at like 14 or something.
That's very good.
That was like her first movie.
Okay, lovely. Miranaya. Miranaya?
Oh, yes.
Was the director?
No, it wasn't Miranaya.
I don't remember.
It was an Indian woman.
Yeah, it was, but she did Monsoon Wedding and...
Right.
Who directed...
Bombay.
Who directed Bended Like Beckham?
I'm looking it up.
No, look at the card. It's on there.
Is the director on there?
Yeah.
Oh, Gurinder Chadha.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's talk about
what we've seen.
Let's talk quickly on movies.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Just because I wanted to chat quickly about Die My Love.
Okay.
Which is coming to the Bioscope in 2 weeks' time. And Perrin, you've had a chance to see it, because I think there's no denying the fact that it does exist out there.
Okay.
Because it's released earlier in the year. Well, it released a
it
while
released
ago.
Last year, yeah.
Last year. And so these films do crop up. What did you think about Die, My Love? I think let's just do a quick back of the box. This is Jennifer Lawrence, Robert Pattinson starring a film directed by Lynn Ramsey, who's mm-hmm. a famous, credible director who was behind The Rat Catcher, very famously, a Scottish film, director.
You never really hear.
We need to talk about Kevin.
Yes, yeah.
She's done quite a lot of stuff. And this is a film that is based off a book that Scorsese
produced,
read and loved, as well as Jennifer Lawrence. And so he wanted to see it exist. And so him and Jennifer Lawrence have been working to make this film happen. They chose Lynn Ramsey as the right director to direct. And this movie comes out. And it's effectively about a woman's descent into madness as she lives with her husband and newly born baby in basically the middle of nowhere in America.
Yeah.
Right. I think that sort of sums it up.
No, that sums it up well.
What did you think of it?
So, okay, so the best way to look at it this way is that it's not a movie for everyone. It's an art movie.
It's right. very arty.
It's
beautifully shot.
It's
rich colors.
Yeah, the acting's incredible. Jennifer Lawrence is phenomenal in it. I would say it's a very feral film. It feels feral.
Yeah,
right?
Literally and figuratively. There's on more than one occasion, Jennifer Lawrence is walking through the sort of bush.
Yeah, she's like
as a cat.
Yeah,
right.
So
I had a chance to watch it last week as an exhibitor.
Yeah.
And it's tickets are on sale. It's going to screen at the Bioscope in 2 weeks' time. And I just want to contextualize it for people.
It's a very visceral experience. So the best film I can compare it to is A Woman Under the Influence with Gina Rowlands and Peter Falk. And that's directed by John Cassavetes. And it's famously also about a woman who's been subjected to a domestic life now. And she's slowly coming undone, right?
Yeah.
And that's what Die, My Love is essentially. It feels like that, an ode to that.
Yeah, it is a very potent cocktail that isn't going to be for everyone. But for someone that knows what they're coming for, you've got a rich cocktail to drink.
So right? Lynn Ramsey is a challenging filmmaker. She's never made films that are necessarily easy to digest. I'd say her most accessible film would be You Were Never Really Here with Joaquin Phoenix. It's a short, it's less than 80 minutes. Right. It's basically a taxi driver kind of vibe of a film. It's like a thriller. It's really fantastic. But We Need to Talk About Kevin is a hard watch.
And it's a hard subject matter.
Ratcatcher is basically poverty porn. A great film, but it's so depressing.
It's set during the garbage strikes in Scotland.
Glasgow,
and it's like, I watched it in varsity, and I was like, is this English?
Yeah.
Like, we need subtitles, because
the
Scottish accents are so thick.
Yeah, and Glaswegian accent is thick, right?
Yeah.
So with Die, My Love, it's a film that, the best way to describe it is I felt gritty afterwards. I felt grimy, you know what I mean? Because the film, you just are living in this slush of her experience, where she's experiencing postpartum depression and she's slowly losing her mind. And there's a great companion documentary I would recommend people to watch called Witches, and it's the whole documentary is about cinema's portrayal of witches in films.
Okay.
And it relates to her experience of her having postpartum depression. So she checked herself into an institution because she was having suicidal thoughts and thoughts to harm her child because she was just experiencing postpartum depression. And this film is what I've seen people say is a very real experience of that, where you just are losing your sense of identity because now you're a mother. But now with her character, she's living in the middle of nowhere. She's been subjected to be a housewife waiting for her husband.
You feel the boredom.
Yeah, that's a film, right? It's a movie. It's about moments, not necessarily plot.
Exactly.
So it's a film that, I would recommend for anyone to watch if they just want to experience Lynn Ramsey and her players just improvising this madness.
Yeah, and no, that's a great way to put it.
It's a great exercise of performance and improvisation. And the interesting thing about the film is that, so there's, in the beginning of the film, there's a sex scene between Jennifer Lawrence and Robert Pattinson. It's a very, best way to describe it is feral sex scene.
Yeah.
And that was their first scene together. They had never met properly before.
Oh, interesting.
And Jennifer Lawrence has even said, because, I mean, obviously there's the whole talk of intimacy coordinators and stuff like that, and I think that's a very important role.
Yeah.
Obviously, if the actors are consensual in wanting to do it without that, then it's by all means up to them, right? But Jennifer Lawrence says she prefers sex scenes with people she doesn't know. Like, she doesn't like having sex scenes with people she's very familiar with because she feels weird about it. So she said that was a good icebreaker for her and Pattinson. And if you watch their press junkets, they are so good together. Nice. They're giggling and they're like having so much fun together. So yeah, it's a great, it's a great opposition of what the film is, because the film isn't fun at all. I'm gonna admit it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's a very visceral experience.
Lovely. Thank you, Perrin.
Pleasure.
All right. One other thing I wanted to chat about very quickly is to let people know about this film Epic.
Yeah.
Right.
Which stands for Elvis Presley in Concert.
Mm.
It is an exciting documentary. Effectively, it's somewhat of a concert film. And it's made by Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah.
And it is also coming to the Bioscope. And it's the exhibitor screening I missed, but I'm sending Perrin as my proxy / collaborator on these screenings, because the screening of it happened on the day that Emily was born. So I missed it.
I'm sick of you slacking at your job. Hey?
I'm sorry, man.
Get your priorities in order, man.
Like,
no, it was wild, but it was lovely hearing your feedback on it.
Mm.
Touch on the film quick.
So when Baz Luhrmann was making the Elvis movie
with Austin Butler,
so a large portion of that film, essentially the second and third act, is about his revival back, right? So that's his Christmas special where he came back and into the spotlight.
Elvis's comeback,
the comeback show, which is a very famous. It's that one where it's got the big Elvis sign behind him.
Yeah, written in red, and he was in the black outfit.
Yeah, great, great performance. And then the last portion of the film is about his Vegas residency.
Yeah.
Where he famously, that's where he ended his career, and where, you know, unintentionally ended his career. But anyways, so while filming this, they discovered a trove of unseen footage from that era, BTS, concert footage, stuff like that. So it's a documentary. There are no talking heads, really. It's just footage of this event happening. And what I love about watching documentaries like this is that, so Elvis, even though he's not as prominently famous here as like the Stones or Beatles, I don't think we got the Elvis like craze here as much as we got those other bands and stuff, because the movie states that Elvis never toured outside of America, which is interesting.
And, and part of that was a little bit of a conspiracy that the Colonel, who was played by Tom Hanks in the Elvis film, was this problematic person who also had this completely ambiguous past and citizenship. And the feeling was that he couldn't leave the country.
Yeah, that's exactly.
And he didn't have his paperwork. He didn't want to. And he held Elvis a little too close. He basically kind of trapped him in America.
He held him hostage,
When he should have done tours around the world. The Stones, obviously, famously are successful because they're a British band that broke America.
The Beatles as well.
British invasion. That's where that huge success came from. And Elvis was always that sort of so distinctly American product because he never left America.
But that's the crazy thing about Elvis, right? Is that he is still like, so what I'm mentioning is what's interesting about watching documentaries like this, like the Beatles documentary that, that 4-hour one that Peter Jackson did, is that it's so wild watching the actual person there on screen.
And also just letting them be them.
Exactly. It's not Elvis acting in his movies. You know, it's actually real. You know what I mean? It's you're seeing him in this environment, and it feels surreal. And that's what I felt watching the film.
Cool.
And the thing is with Elvis, I'm not a fan of his music. I'll admit that.
Sure, yeah.
But it just was such a great experience. I mean, he's a fucking great, great performer. Holy shit. Mm. And just watching those performances, it's like captivating. You're like, holy shit, you know?
Yeah,
and
interesting. Okay.
The only thing that I would have liked that they did was that a lot of the times they didn't complete the songs.
Okay.
So they would
not very much a concert film.
Yeah, it's part concert, part documentary. Okay. It's more of an observation film, and it's well edited. It's really well put together. I'm not a big Baz Luhrmann fan, and I thought he did a fantastic job with it. They felt like there was restrain, but I also feel like there was a bit too much restrain.
Interesting, because Baz Luhrmann very much goes wild.
Yeah,
the camera swirls.
He's Michael Bay with glitter. You know what I mean?
That's a good way to put it. So we've got a group called Blue Suede Heaven that come to the Bioscope once a year.
Mm.
I think the average age of this Elvis fan club is in its 80s.
Nice.
Cool. And they've got cool jackets. And there's this dude called Wade who's a Elvis singer,
impersonator
who puts on a show. And so they are very excited that this,
this
documentary is coming.
Cool.
I'm honored that they will come and watch it at the Bioscope. And we're going to have Wade back to perform. And it's just cool. It's lovely. Yeah, so
that's great. They'll love it. Yeah.
That's coming at the end of Feb.
Cool.
So from the 27th. This film, epic.
Nice.
That's a film that'll be great on the big screen.
Totally.
With the big noise, big
and
sound.
With people. Oh. And it's lovely. Okay, should we talk about some TV shows?
Yeah.
Okay. No. I want to mention the fact that my life has completely changed.
Of course.
And I can immediately see, literally on day one, being home and back in our home, just how I can't finish a show in one go. There's a little too much going on. But I took great joy in watching season 10, the final season of Queer Eye.
Oh, right.
Oh, cool.
Obviously, having this kid for the first time is this incredible, magical flurry of emotion. I cried, and I was teary in this operating room the second I heard this cry. Staring down at this little baby, just like what it means to be alive is right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
The miracle of life.
Mm.
And nothing quite complements it like the TV show Queer Eye, which I have advocated for and spoken at great lengths about. So I won't get too much into it now, other than this TV show is not what you think. It's not a bunch of queer dudes parading queerness.
Mm.
It is. It perhaps started that way as a TV show, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, and it was all about fashion and whatever.
It was more superficial.
But the show has become so much more. And you if you're not familiar with it, you have 10 seasons of the most heartwarming, life affirming television, where it's about they find people who need a change, and it's people who are perhaps doing so much good for so many other people, they don't have time to look after themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
Anything from a haircut to clothes that make them feel happy in their own skin or feel good about themselves. The best example is how like a home can get cluttered, filled with shit you don't need. And you need that big change to really derail what's happening in your life and set you on a new path. And all these people are very deserving of it.
Mm.
And you feel so happy at the end when, you know, they've just got this new lease on life.
Mm.
I don't think the 10th season ups the game in any way. Like, they just are the same kind of characters that they've gotten in previous seasons. And so it's more of the same. But it was just, lovely to be watching that at this time.
Mm.
I thought it was the right medicine for this right moment. it's heartwarming in amongst this kind of very heartwarming moment in our own lives with this little Bubba sleeping next to us on the couch. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough. Cool. It's over on Netflix. And yeah, this is the 10th and final season. So it was cool to have them reflect on what it means for them as a show. And yeah, can't recommend it enough.
Nice.
Nice.
The other show we've been watching in amongst Queer Eye is the film is the TV show Pole to Pole.
Okay.
Right.
Which is on Disney Plus, and this is the Will Smith National Geographic show. And I just think the context and who Will Smith is now is just so fascinating.
Right.
On the surface is a show with a famous person out of their comfort zone, going literally from the South Pole to the North Pole.
Right.
And putting themselves in this crazy extreme conditions. So the first episode is him literally getting to the South Pole, visiting these, it's for some reason, Brazilian dudes living in this like tiny little hut.
Oh.
It looks like a scene from The Thing. And, you know, they're doing this important research. And we learn something about, you know, how things travel in the winds and right. how the ice can give us this information. And these dudes are learning. And there's a little, you know, a little sprinkle of climate change. Little sprinkle of comedy is, you know, Will Smith's being this kind of quite sort of typical comedic, a little more black humor of like, you know, why the fuck am I here? This is out of my comfort zone. There's an episode in the heart of the Amazon where they go down into this cave and they milk the venom of a scorpion. And so it's all the normal, cool National Geographic, looks beautiful, learn about the planet. How we can be better as humans. But what's very interesting is you've got fucking Will Smith there.
Right.
Who you forget was this huge movie star. And has been completely in your head, or at least my head, been so brought down to size. By himself.
Yeah.
His own fucking undoing. When he walked on stage, and I think about this, the Oscars that year had a very interesting layout.
Right.
Where you were at these cocktail tables on the side. Don't you find that strange?
Yes.
The first time they ever tried to change the layout of the Oscars, where you were almost on this even footing of the stage, you were almost on side of stage to walk on, was the year that a dude very easily got on stage and slapped the host.
Yeah.
Now, years before and years after, it's been
seats,
a normal
like theater seat
where you would really have to go for it.
Yes.
Everyone would see you coming. You'd have to walk up those steps that Jennifer Lawrence fell on. And so it's interesting. And he does acknowledge it. So he does bring it up. And there is this one episode where they're in Bhutan.
Okay.
And the episode, it's about four episodes in. And it definitely is a change of frequency and pace to the point where it's not like the other episodes, where he does reflect on how he's reached this kind of pinnacle of success and he's watched it all kind of disappear.
Right.
So it's very interesting that he's put himself in this position. I don't think you would have normally gotten this caliber actor doing a National Geographic road trip thing.
Well, I suppose Chris Hemsworth has a Nat Geo show he's done a couple seasons of.
Well, that was a very special one. That was about his father.
Well, he's done another one.
Oh.
There was one about his father. There was a one before that he did as well.
Okay.
Which was about human limits and like human beings being strong.
I know Bear Grylls had a special where like big A-listers was on
we
his
took
show.
Celebrities out. Yeah, I remember
I think
that.
Billie Eilish was on that one of them.
Oh,
wow.
Sure.
Like big A-listers.
Lovely. Yeah. Well, it's just like he's really like the dude has the time.
Yes.
To
Chris Hemsworth is doing it in between Marvel movies.
Yeah.
This
Will
dude,
Smith is doing it in between nothing.
Yeah, you get the feeling like he needs to figure out how he's going to rebuild himself.
Yeah, because he had that disastrous tour now with like trying to reignite his music career.
Which was, that's also just such a antiquated type of music.
Yes.
And it just, when he crops up and sings about hot girls, you're like,
oh Jesus.
It just it just points out just how of its time so that music was.
As well. Yeah. The thing is, like, with
there's that Family Guy takeaway of how family friendly Will Smith's rap is.
Yes.
And he's like, haha, yeah, come on, was, yeah.
No, but he was actually really good back in the day, man. Like,
no, of course.
So the thing is, if Slapgate didn't happen, right, I think people would have been like, hell yeah, let's go to Will Smith's reviving his rap career, yeah, or whatever.
Totally.
You know?
It's interesting to see a product like this National Geographic series in a very different light. Like, you are watching this going, okay, how are we rebuilding our career?
Exactly. Yeah.
Not just how are we saving the planet and milking a scorpion.
Yeah.
It's not that. You're watching it going, how are you rebuilding yourself?
Yeah.
You just know Chris Rock is watching it showing, going, fuck this guy.
But, but Will Smith says something interesting. He says, in that moment when life really fell apart, he actually said, and I don't know whether this is just a well-oiled PR sort of thought through response, but it felt quite genuine. He says this on the show. He says, I felt this incredible sense of relief where the world actually got to see who I really was.
Right.
And they could see that I'm flawed and they could see that I've got issues and I could be myself more now than before.
Right.
But that's the irony, is they could see that I'm being more myself now. He did the opposite of that post-slap.
No. Like,
he was even more phony and people didn't buy it. That's why it's crazy with Slapgate. I dug Will Smith. I don't think he deserved to win for King Richard. He was good in it, but I don't think he deserved it. He should have won for Ali. But, like, he... With Will Smith, I liked him. The moment that happened, almost everyone was like, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Like,
totally, yeah.
It's crazy. I haven't seen such a steep nosedive of opinion on someone.
Decades, like, of goodwill instantly disappear.
100%, right? Men in Black, he's great in Men in Black. You know?
We used to make such a funny joke about boyfriend points, of course, in the band. Now we're all husbands. But the best example of boyfriend points is, like, you can do such good and you can rack them up thinking, fuck, I've earned myself so many boyfriend points.
Yeah.
And then, like, a crypto wave, it just fucking, you can do something wrong and then everything disappears and all of a sudden you're in the doghouse.
Yeah.
I guess it's the same as a husband as well. You can earn, you can rack up all your husband points and then in a moment, and you didn't even do the slapping.
But
and in a moment, like, figuratively speaking, you didn't do the slapping and, like, and all of a sudden, you just have nothing.
Yeah. But it's like the same thing's happening to Tarantino now. Like, it's been more gradual. Like, people are starting to be like, oh, fuck this guy. But, like, the Paul Dano thing, everyone's like, okay, I can't defend this dude anymore. Like, he's just an asshole, you know? But with Will Smith, geez, like, it's like, basically, he had, let's just an example, 100% fan base. When that happened, it, like, went down to, like, 30%.
It was incredible.
And the fact that they still gave him the award is insane.
The thing is, nobody had time to process it by then. It was still this odd thing that nobody kind of knew what
to do. I thought it was a bit, because I watched it live.
Yeah.
And when it happened, I was like, this is strange. No one's really laughing. And then when he started shouting, keep your my wife's name out of your fucking mouth, I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
There's that famous shot of him doing it, and you see Lupita Nyong'o behind him going like this. She's like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening.
It is interesting. What I hate the most, and this is perhaps be the last point, is that I don't remember anything else from those Oscars.
Yeah.
And all those people that worked so bloody hard, and all the foreign films, and all the documentaries, all of them just got fucking lost in that.
Yeah.
And what a pity.
And it sucks, because I think straight after the slap happened, Questlove won Best Documentary.
For Summer of Soul or something.
Yeah, great movie. But no one remembers the rest of the night because of Slapgate. Yeah.
Nobody even remembers the fact that he won the Oscar.
It's like Moonlight. The unfair thing about how it won is that people only remember that, they said the wrong thing, you know? It really sucks. It takes away from the celebration of what it should be. Yeah. You know?
One of the last things we've got time for today is to talk about this Muppet show.
Oh, yes.
I love the fact that you say this is your favorite thing in the whole world.
I love the Muppets so much.
Let's start with that. Why do you love the Muppets so
there's
much?
There's something about the very natural, very earned, like, wholesomeness of the Muppets.
Of course, yeah.
Not contrived.
Like, there's such a genuine expression of the, like, positivity that Jim Henson wanted to put out into the world.
Yeah.
And I love that about them.
And so what did they do?
So they did what? So back in, like, mid-70s to early 80s, there was The Muppet Show.
Yes. Yeah.
Which was their, like, variety show every week. They'd have a guest. The first guest that they ever had on The Muppet Show was South African.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was a Juliet Prowse, was a South African ballet dancer.
Oh, that's cool.
But it went from them, from no one wanting to be on the show to being the biggest show in the world.
And it was always a kids show, primarily?
It kind of sat in the middle because it was a primetime show.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Jim Henson's whole thing was he wanted to prove that puppets weren't just for children.
Oh, good. He wanted to make more. So it was more than a kids
show. You get
that,
yeah.
Definitely, yeah.
It's one of those age. But it's like a boundary crossing age thing where,
yes,
like, but kids can love it, and with Sesame Street,
exactly,
and then grown ups can love it. It's a proper family product.
But it sounds like it was an intentional thing to prove. So,
yeah.
Okay, and so they've done that for many years.
Ran for, I think, 6 seasons. It was hugely popular. Ended in 1981, and now Disney, because Disney now own the Muppets, they've owned it for a while now. They've done, at least for now, one new episode of the Muppet Show. Made in exactly the same way that the old show was made.
Okay.
There's a guest star, Sabrina Carpenter's on it.
Mm.
And
maybe
it's done in exactly the same way.
Testing the water.
That's what a lot of people think. Like, for now, it's just one episode, but if it does well, hopefully it'll actually make a new season of it.
That'd be great.
And that's always the world needs those vehicles. It's it's a little bit like Hot Ones, which was just started as a really interesting, something refreshing, instead of just a normal press junket. Let's add something to this mix, which
breaks down the
star eating progressively hotter chicken wings while the host asks great questions, ultimately to punt the new movie or the new album that you have out. So the Muppets can do that.
Yes.
They can be that version of that in 2026, which is
it feels like the show ended in 1981 and now they've just been waiting and then they just started it up again in 2026. And it looks and feels exactly the way the show used to.
I feel that's great. I know we see that often where, like, the Muppets every few years they're like, okay, we're back.
Yes.
You know, we're reminding you why we are amazing, why we are relatable to everyone. Every character is relatable to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I know with that, so didn't Disney know? So Disney owned the movie rights, right?
Yeah.
But didn't, because of Trump slashing public access television stuff, doesn't that mean the Muppets are, like, dead on PBS?
Okay, so when Disney first wanted to buy the Muppets, when Jim Henson was still alive,
yes,
they wanted to buy Sesame Street as well.
Yeah, and that's a separate entity. Yeah.
But he would not give them Sesame Street. So Sesame Street is still its own independent thing. Disney do not own that.
Okay.
Disney own just the Muppets.
Sesame Street is the thing that's in danger of not existing.
Yes, because that's funded by PBS.
Yeah.
And now that they've been defunded because of Trump.
I think wasn't there rumors of, like, bidding for it now? Was it like Netflix or HBO or something?
That's possible. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know anything
about
that.
Jennifer Lawrence and someone else, I think, you know, many of these actors have their own producing vehicle.
Mm.
They wanted to make a Muppet movie. Miss Piggy movie.
Yes. Jennifer Lawrence and Emma Stone, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. And then someone said, will you play Miss Piggy? And she's like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Miss Piggy will play Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
I can't even touch that talent or something.
Yeah.
Like, it was so cool that even in the context of making the movie, they're honoring, you know, these incredible sort of actors.
Yeah.
But that's what I've always liked about the pop culture-ness of Muppets is people see them as real entities.
Yeah,
those
Monster
are all my favorites.
is the incredible drummer that he is.
Oh, yeah, Animal.
Animal.
But my favorite Muppet movies are the ones where the Muppets are treated like actors and they're playing roles.
Yeah, that's why there's that question that goes around, on at least that I see online, is name one movie that you replace all the actors except for one with the Muppets.
Yeah.
And then people be like, you know, Jurassic Park or Saving Private
Ryan.
Or
I know the one that always comes up is people say they should make a Benoit Blanc movie. Oh, where Daniel cool. Craig is the only
oh,
human.
Oh my God.
And all the other characters
I
are
I would love that so much.
There is nothing in the world out. That I want more than that,
that
movie.
That is fucking amazing.
A Knives Out Muppet movie.
Yes.
Oh, I love it.
That would be incredible.
Yeah.
Lovely. Is there anything else that we are burning to chat about now?
I don't think so.
No, I can. There's stuff that I want to finish and save for next time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lovely. Listen, thank you guys.
Mm.
It's good to be back.
Yes.
I've still got a lot of energy, but I can see myself crashing in a few hours' time when it all catches up to me. But it is such a treat to be back. It's such a treat to sit for an hour or so and just talk with you guys, my chums, and anyone who's listening.
Yes.
But we will see you guys again next week.
Definitely.
See you
all right.
Soon.
Thank you. Our hub is thevideostore.co.za. There you can... You can see past episodes. You can see links to all of the social media. And also just like get in touch, man.
Yeah.
Send an email. Leave a comment, especially about the stuff that we've chatted about in this last episode. Or you are welcome to give us your Hey Did You Guys Sees.
Yeah.
Just your opinions and your returns. All right. Lekker. Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.